Okay, everyone ready? We're up to the the infinite improvement of mankind, the creation of woman. That's the topic of the shiur. Okay? Okay, now that everyone knows how high. Huh? The question is which half?
The better half, the better half.
Well, let's see the shiur.
Did you ever title last week's shiur, Rabbi?
Yes. Well, for the website we did. What's in a name? Not bad. It's Eli Lassen. He deserves all the credit. Okay. Command and control. Well, that would have been uprooted by tonight's year. Okay. There's really are some very interesting things we can see. We're on Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. And the next few psukim, really taking us towards the end of the Perek, although there is a little interesting extra nuance at the end of the Perek. Basically talk about now the creation of Chava. We've set the stage with the last week's shir, all about how Adam was lonely, Lo Tov Heyos Adam Levado, and Adam saw the animals, he named the animals, we saw the Mefarshim and what that meant, and, well, it was different approaches, but there was a certain common approach that what was getting at, in terms of what's in a name, had to do with the essence of the animals vis-a-vis the essence of Noah, of Adam, and realizing the inherent incompatibility, and therefore there was a need for apparently a new creation. Although how new the creation of Chava is will be, in fact, part of the shir. So we're left off now with that exact point, which is Pasuk Chav Aleph. Faithful Tzukim, Yipol, Veitzumi. Ve'yapel Hashem Elokim Tardema Ala Adam. Hashem made fall upon or cast upon Adam Tardema. We'll have to see what that means, but we usually understand it to mean some form of sleep. Adam is sleeping. Yishan, again, a little bit repetitive. Let's see what that's about if we can. And Adam is sleeping. Yikach achas mitzah losav. Who wants to translate that last word? And God took mitzah losav.
Rib.
Okay, that may or may not be correct. Uwa machlokes between Jean and Ethel, and that's exactly 2 days in Chazal. Since we are talking about the creation of Chava, we'll have to give it to your wife. As you said before, the better half, yes. But it's interesting, I think the overwhelming majority of people, certainly non-Jews, but even I think Jews, assume as a given that the translation is rib, and there is a reason for that. It is an opinion in Chazal, we will see, but it's actually not the predominant view. It is not the predominant view, but we'll have to see that. So there's some procedure, some surgical procedure, some perhaps painful procedure done to Adam, and he is therefore left wounded or incomplete somehow, and therefore Hashem needs to finish the job, which is sewing up the patient, the Yizkor Basar Tachtana, and then Hashem has to close up what seems to have been an open wound. Pasuk continues, Pasuk Chavez, with whatever it is that he's taken out of or a part of Adam, even Hashem Elokim Es Hat Sela, and Hashem built. Again, whether it's the rib or the side, we'll have to see. But whatever it is that he has took, it has basically the new raw material, which he has shelok af min ha'adam. Again, the pasuk stresses. We'll have to see and think about why the need for that stress, that the woman, this new creature, is being taken from Adam. The Isha is now being turned into Isha. And at this point, that's the only name we have. She is Isha. The Yibieha el ha'adam. She is brought to the man. Now we can translate Adam, I guess, until really we couldn't have until now. We can more accurately translate Adam as the man. Let me just read another pasuk or two, but we really will be focusing tonight here just on those two psukim. The Yomar HaAdam, and finally Adam has this great epiphany, Zos HaPam Etzem Me'atzamai U'Basar Mi'Basari. This time, again, when we get to this pasuk more in depth, we'll have to see what he means by this time. It's a bone for my body and flesh for my flesh. Lazos yikra isha, and that's why, interestingly enough, why are females called isha? Kime ish lukachazos. Because it's not a coincidence that it sounds like ish. It's exactly showing that original unity between the two. The hey is just the lukachazos, but it's basically ish isha. Very similar, just that slight difference, one from the other. And therefore, that leads into Al-Kain, that's a transitive, Al-Kain, and therefore, because they started off, it sounds like, together, Al-Kain, therefore, Ya'azov Ish, again, famous, Tzukim, Es Aviv, Es Imo, at some point in a person's life, a man will leave his father and his mother, V'davak V'ishto, will cling to his wife, Hayu Levasar Echad, and will be reunited as one. And the parak then concludes, Yu Shnehem Arumim, kind of getting back to the narrative. Now we took like a step, like there was like a break, where the narrator kind of just, you know, had this profound rumination on all future generations and existential realities, but then we get back to the actual story where there's an actual Adam and an actual Isha, Ish and Isha, and we are told the Yishnei Marumim, they are both undressed, Adam the Ishto, but nevertheless, lo Yisbashashu, they were not embarrassed.
Is there any significance that it says with Nohaki Ish as Ovi Bimo rather than either both of them would be?
Yeah. Well, certainly it's a big Shema Bracha speech.
True. Very true.
Okay, I'm not going to tell your kid that. Okay. So we'll have
They will find out.
I hope you don't get in trouble, Bernie, with your wife before your children. Okay.
No, it's true.
Gene wants to get in trouble, too. There's room in the doghouse for all of you guys. I'm not saying a word. Okay. Anyway.
The whole husband always goes towards the wife's side.
We are getting off field. We are getting way far afield. Okay, well, as I said, we're focusing on Sukkim Chavtu Chavveyu. I can return with the wisdom that I'll hopefully glean from my stay in Israel to be able to sit now that I know what awaits me for the Wednesday that I come back. Big issues, big issues. Okay. So a number of things to discuss with the creation itself. We want to focus tonight on the creation of Chava, creation perhaps, or separation. Perhaps two different ways that one could more accurately formulate it. So let's begin. It's basically the creation, separation of independent creation of Chava, which we still don't have that name yet, but that is encapsulated essentially in Tuktukim. Now, Tuktukim is not a lot, but it's two more than in Perek Aleph, right? In Perek Aleph, there was just this announcement that there is a man and a woman. But here we at least have two dedicated Tuktukim, dedicated because there seems to have been a second stage. So, an obvious first point, which we'll keep in the back of our mind, is how do you relate, or can we somehow synthesize Perek Aleph and Perek Beis? We're not reviewing tonight, but keep in mind, or review, or go to the website and listen again, for the Shurim of last year, where we spoke about this, about Adam himself, and not just, but primarily focusing on the approach of Rosh Soloveitchik, and the fact that very, very different approaches in Perek Aleph and Perek Beis to the creation of Adam, and his suggestion, and there are others perhaps, but his is perhaps the most well-known, suggesting to attempt to synthesize those two or to show how they're complementary to each other. And while I was in college, Stern College, I had a Torah volume, and actually somebody who was a contemporary of my wife published an article called Chava 1 and Chava 2, the takeoff of Adam or Adam Aleph and Adam Beis, which was the Salvation essay on Adam, basically tried to show how there are certain, you could apply his chidushim to Adam to Chava. But that's not what we're going to do, but it is something to at least for now to keep in the back of our mind. But let's leave aside the connection to Perek Aleph. Let's just think about the actual narrative in Perek Beis that we just read, these two psukim. So what questions are on our mind that perhaps at least some of them we can address tonight? Again, we are told, Yipal Hashem Elokim Tardeima al Ha'adam Vayishan. So that's step number one. Something had to be done to Adam. Number two is then the preparatory stage. Number two is the actual, if you will, surgical procedure or something to that effect where something is removed from Adam. So again, one other question which we'll certainly be addressing, I already alluded to, is just so we understand what happened. What is being removed? How do you understand mitzah lo sav or tzala? What does that mean? So that's a second issue. But what else, perhaps, are there any other things that we might want to consider in light of this discussion? Adam is put to sleep on some level. Something is removed from him. And then the yiven, somehow this removed object is formed into Isha. And then finally, the Yivyeha El Ha'adam, she is brought to us.
From a pshat standpoint, what is this whole Vayivyeha?
Good. That's one of the questions I hope to get to. It's the last two sources on the sheet. That's a good question. What do you mean she was brought? Where is she coming from? Where is she coming
from?
Right. Wasn't she just, isn't she right there? Okay, good. What else?
Adam is Vayitzer. And this for Isha, it's Vayivyeha.
You mean in Perek Beis as well? Vayitzer. You mean where? So just so we're all on the same page as you, Ethan. What pasuk are you referring to? Is the Yitzer?
Yitzer.
Beis Yitzer.
No, it's not Adam.
That's the animal. That's the animal.
I'm sorry.
The actually before that, no?
But it is, yeah, before that.
No, no, Pasuk Zion. The Yitzer Hashem Elokim Esa Adam Afrim and Adam. Good. Good. So the relationship between the initial creation of the creature called Adam and then the secondary creation or separation of this other creature which we're now calling Isha. So perhaps something different is going on, and perhaps Ethan is noting maybe that's hinted at by the fact that it's Vayitzer about the Ish or Adam, and it's the Yiven when it comes to Isha. Good, that's another point which we'll be indirectly relating to. Anything else?
Is the first time the word Ish is used?
Ish, as in just Ish? What did we have until now? Adam was never referred to as Ish before this?
No.
I need my computer to do a search, but... Or just ask Ethan? It's not the first, it is the first. It is the first, okay? It is the first, good. I don't have comments on that. That's just a good observation. Very good observation. Although, again, the only thing we know until now is it's significant because now we have Isha. And that's the contrast the Torah itself makes. It's not like a Mefarish making that play on words. The Torah itself talks about Ish and, you know, we see Ish, you know, Ish and Isha, ki Ish to Kachos, as she is taken from him. Anything else?
We have the Yabtel,
Targema, and then Isha. Good. So what's going on with that preparatory stage? The redundancy or the synonyms or what's going on with those words I want to discuss, but that's a very short question which I want to get to. Let's think of something maybe a little bit more philosophical or profound about that preparatory stage.
Well,
I'll give you a simple one-word question. The answer is the W. Why? Why is Adam going to sleep?
Right.
Why can't he be awake?
Right, it could have been done in a miraculous way.
Good, that's one variety of it.
So perhaps
one variation of it. Number two is who said that there was any need for him to be sleeping? You're assuming there was a need, but miracle could have compensated. Maybe it was no need. What's going on? Is it okay? Do you think it's painful?
Or?
He shouldn't have seen it.
Why not? So why not? Good, I'll mention to you something. That's
the
mix.
It would be good.
Okay, you're getting ready to answers, but that's the question. Why not? It's certainly a question that has to be asked. Why does he need to be sleeping? I'll mention just for an example. Before my first child was born, when I was expecting, I went to my Rebbe to discuss with him some of the halachos of childbirth, whether it be it comes out on Shabbos, or just the halachos nidah, things which come up 7 days a week. And one of the issues, which I don't remember if I asked, I think I probably did, because I was in Lamaze at the time. Pleasant memories for us all.
Lamaze.
My wife was teaching in Lamaze, actually. My wife was teaching in Lamaze, but we were in Lamaze. And I think I might have asked him because of that, or maybe he brought it up, which is that in certain hospitals, they have a mirror. So even if you want to be by your wife's side, they have a mirror so you can see the baby coming out. So I think I must have asked the question because I don't know if I was really consciously believe this or not, but I remember specifically saying to something like, of course I would look, I would never want to. And he looked at me like, I would look. The miracle of life. You can't, but wouldn't you want to? To see that, unbelievable. So, wouldn't Adam wanted to have seen the miracle of life? To see Chava being created, what an incredible thing. But yet, we're told that for some reason not. So the question is, why not? Is there some significance to that fact or not?
There's even a more basic question here. I mean, why would Hashem have to use it? He created Adam out of...
Good, and that's the last thing I'm waiting for. Good, the last thing I'm waiting for. The Rosh Baum is on target once again. Your wife's not even here to hear in Shep Nafis. Why is Chava being created from Adam? There is no other example in all of creation where one thing's created from something else. Right? The Mrs. Elephant is not created from Mr. Elephant, and does. Before or under or after? Yes, good. That will be implicit in at least one of two of the other issues we're going to discuss. Good. So you see, in these two psukim, we're jam-packed with pshat and philosophical questions. So let's hope we can get through most, if not all of them. Take a look at your sheet. What is Tardei Ma? This is a little bit relating to a little bit relating. Oh, good, 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 good. We'll see that. Not yet, but we will see that. This is a little bit relating to the question of perhaps the difference between Tardema and why the Pasuk then uses a different term of Ishan. Says the Radak, and this is also mentioned by other Mefarshim as well. There's a particular nuance to the presentation of the Radak, so I picked him. Tardema, Yoser, Meshena. It's a deeper sleep than what's called Shena. Shena Yoser Mitanuma. There's three levels of sleep, apparently. I don't know if this is RAM or whatever that's
REM.
Called. REM, or no, that's a group, right? Whatever, music group. RAM, right? What's the sleeping? It's REM.
REM.
Oh, it is REM. Oh, I got it right. Okay. Look at that. Okay, so I don't know exactly that's what's being referred to, but, or preluded, you know, prelude, but says the Radak, there are three levels of sleep, and the deepest is Tardema. So on some level, again, it almost begs the question, Naomi, so why do you have both in the Pasuk? Perhaps, you know, it started off one and it became the other, or he was in a deeper sleep and, you know, the doctor says we took him out of it. I'm not sure. But it says the Radak, there are different levels of sleep. Why the need for such a deep sleep? So this is an issue I'll read now in the Radak, and I'm going to get back to it to the larger issue, which is we asked, so the why question. So the Radak tells us, it's painful. It was a surgical procedure. And for this point, we don't really know, nor do we need to know, if mitzalosav means taking out a rib of Adam, or it just means cutting him in half, taking something out of the side. Doesn't matter for now. It's still painful. So who needs Adam to have so much pain? You could extrapolate, perhaps. You wouldn't want him to associate his Isha with pain, right? All cliches and, you know, tired married men jokes aside, right? This is supposed to be something that's wonderful, not something that's bringing pain to his life. So we wouldn't want that. We wouldn't want him to be in pain, Stam, and we certainly wouldn't want him to associate her with pain. So says the Radak, as the Rabbanit Monk referred to before, it's basically like anesthesia. Put him to sleep, hopefully he won't feel the pain. So now we get to Ellie's point. This is the reason I quoted the Radak now, since the Radak, I believe, is the only one who makes this point that I saw. Couldn't Hashem done a miracle? He needed to put him to sleep? Couldn't he let Adam see? And let's assume that it would have been an incredible thing to witness. One time in history such a thing ever happened. Wouldn't you have wanted to see such a thing? And maybe he could have seen it, and then it wouldn't have been painful, because he could have made a miracle to avoid the pain. Says the Radak, v'hapalas tardema, pain mofes. Excuse me, I skipped a line. End of the second line. Ki lo yasa kel mofes v'mokom shein saraf mofes. You don't need a miracle. Right? This is a profound, far-reaching hashkafa, part of our general philosophy. If you don't need a miracle, you don't get a miracle.
Making her alone is a miracle.
That's one miracle. What do you need to? If you can do it 99, you don't need 100.
There's different levels of miracles. You have an ace,
no, okay, now this is a. There's no question that a whole creation of Chav is a miracle, and it's a greater miracle than if it would have been. I agree. But the point is, just because you have 99 doesn't mean you need 100. That makes it even more profound. It's not just that you don't need a miracle out of thin air. You don't even need a miracle in the. If you can do it in a lesser miracle, you don't do it in a greater miracle. Whatever degree that we can, so to speak, dumb down or lower the miracle quotient, says the Radak, that's what we're doing, and that's what happened here. All of a sudden, no, Adam's looking around, and boom, he's out. You know, it's like someone slipped in something in his drink. You know, isn't that a miracle? He just tired? You know, it wasn't like he was tired and lied down and went to sleep, and then Hashem pounced on him it sounds like it was like a sudden thing. All of a sudden, Adam is naming the animals. Wow, I'm all alone, I'm lonely, none of these animals are for me. Boom, he's sleeping. So isn't that a little bit of a shtickle of a miracle? To make him fall asleep, ain't mofis v'chiddush. That's not really a miracle. Lots of times we fall asleep in exhaustion or just collapse pretty quickly, right? I pretty much try to do that 7 days a week. Counting sheep happens slowly, and I think his point is it's a little bit sudden, and that's out of the ordinary for most of us. But so what? That's already, you know, going to sleep a little faster, a little slower. We're not going to call that a miracle. Now, on the point of sleep, even though this is not really part of the larger shiur, I just opened up the Sefer on a lark an hour ago, and I thought this was so interesting, I decided to include it in the sheet. just a tuck away Mar Mokum, one of my new favorite Sfarim, Zayin LaTorah by Rav Sarotzkin. We've quoted him quite a few times in this year in the last year plus. See, he quotes, I mentioned he's part of the Telzer dynasty. I never knew how until I opened up this Mar Mokum. He married in. As he quotes here, Mori Chami, my father-in-law, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Gordon. Rabbi Eliezer Gordon was one of the original Telzer Rosh Yeshivas, so he married into the Telzer dynasty. And he says, in the name of his father-in-law, Shemizah, this story, this pasuk, is a raya, is a proof, Shehashena is a mapola hila adam. Sleep is like a curse. So sleep is a bad thing. Sleep is nish, the good thing. But, you know, Vayipo, that he puts a play on words. Right, this is unlike the Nigin Vahashena Meshubachas, which I always think with great verve and enthusiasm. Sleep should be praised, Vahashena Meshubachas. But says the Blazer Gordon, no. Shashena Mapola Hiladam. Why? But this is this. What would you think? Let's stop now. And there's a Yiddish saying that Michael Elman likes to always quote from his father. I think that, you know, you can sleep in the kever. What is that idiom referring to? What would you have expected him to continue? You know, don't sleep, don't waste your time sleeping, you know, there'll be plenty of time to sleep after 120. That's the Yiddish idiom. I don't know the original Yiddish. Michael Elman always quotes it to me from his father. What does that idiom mean, or what would you have expected the reason to be? Don't sleep is a bad thing because it's a waste of time. There's so many things to accomplish. That's not what he says, though. I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I think actually what he may be saying is even more profound. Shari Oz, when you're sleeping, Hatamuz, at the end of the line, Shari Oz, Einenu Margi Shasachai. You're not alive. You don't feel what's going on.
It says in the Gemara that it's 160. Yeah,
yes. So what do you mean by that? So you could understand it in either way. Just not right. Doing anything, being docile. But I think he's saying something more subtle. When you're asleep, it's like your senses are numbed. Right? The same reason that, unfortunately, people speak about those who drink. You know, they want to dull the senses. They don't want to feel life. Life is too painful. So on a regular basis, just... You know, that is an assess, that in that sense, sleep is, again, that Maimar Chazal, it's like, it's a type of death. In the sense that you're not alive in the full sense, you don't feel your senses, you know, the synapses aren't, you know, you're not, there's no sensory perception, you're not alive in the fullest sense of the word when you're sleeping. And therefore he concludes, as much as you can, so until the sleep overwhelms you. You should try, live life to the fullest, not only, live every hour to the fullest, live every day to the fullest. As I said, just as an aside, it's a cute little vort, it's more of a shal shudda svar Torah, so to speak, but, it's a good one, I think.
In last week's talk show, we find the same verbiage with Abram, but right before the Greek band, Zomim, and the whole idea, it says, it's hard day, mind, Abram. And you find it in a very negative context, because that's where God says to him, you're going to find out that your people are going to be in Eretz Lelehem, Arbamei Ochana, they're going to be slaves. So the only other context that I know that you find...
Interesting,
that
okay. I wonder if any of the parts would speak about that. Right, it's interesting. So maybe that's both. Okay, good.
Not that this shouldn't be positive.
Right, I understand. Well, we're going to get to that now in a second. So now I want to get back to the issue that the Radak already introduced us to. So the first thing I mentioned from the Radak and why I quoted him already is this notion that there was some benefit, and even though whatever the benefit is, which we're about to see three or four different opinions, whatever the benefit was, couldn't it have been compensated by with a miracle? So one thing the Radak tells us is, we don't do miracles if we don't have to. Okay, that's all on the table. Number two is we have this Shal Shudasvort idea of when you're sleeping, you're not fully alive. Okay, good. Now let's get back to the issue which I really want to discuss, which is that the Radak already addresses, which is new. So why? Why? Why did Hashem? What's gain? Maybe the why is because anything else would have been a miracle, and we don't want to do miracles. Okay, fine. Let's reformulate. Now, not why. But Lamai Nafkamina, what do we gain? What was the benefit? Is there a benefit? What was the benefit for Adam, this happening while Adam is asleep? So we have a few different approaches in Mefarshim. Number one, we just saw from Radak, and others quote it, Alan was alluding to it before, others quote it, that it would have been painful. So who needs Adam to go through pain? This is an opinion that's quoted in the Sforno. Take a look at the next source. One, the second opinion, V'lo yitzta'er, it shouldn't be painful. For Adam. It's also an opinion quoted in the Yabar Benel. Look at the beginning of the Yabar Benel, the fourth source. Im Kadesh lo yargish b'cha'ev. He shouldn't be in pain while the creation is happening. So that's one opinion. However, there are at least a few other opinions. I think each one of them different and nuanced. Look, go back to the Sforno. So until now, one opinion is Adam shouldn't be in pain. Look at the Sforno. What else does he say? And again, I think the Sforno is the only one who says this. Shlo yifachei. I think that's so charming, almost, or profound considering. He shouldn't be scared. Just again, akin to what we mentioned from the Radak last week, the notion of, you know, did Adam overhear Hashem saying, no, buddy, you're lonely. Your life stinks. You're alone. You know, which we never consider when it says that Vayomer Hashem, that Hashem said that Adam heard it. And what would that have been like for Adam to hear? We discussed that a little bit last week. So similarly here, again, to me it's just a fascinating thread that we've now followed through to another pasuk, another shir, another mafarish, which is, what does Adam think's going on? I find that to be such a fascinating question. So says the Sforno, he might have been scared. Could you imagine all of a sudden, whoa! You know, your side is opening, or you're splitting into two. We'll see again, I keep on hedging. You'll understand why. We'll see it explicitly in a few minutes. I think that's fascinating. Maybe it wouldn't have been painful. It would have been, what's going on? What's happening to me? There's no reason you should have understood. We take so much for granted. We know how what happens. But who said Adam knew what was happening? And even though you'll say, if we assume that Hashem did speak to Adam and told him, not good for you to be alone. It wasn't just a statement that the narrator made to us, so to speak. But that doesn't mean that he knew it was happening this way. Maybe some animal or some creature that he didn't yet know or realize is going to, you know, crawl out of the Eich HaDaas. Say, hey, I'm your wife. How did he know it was going to come from within him? The answer is, I assume he didn't know. How could he have known? And if he didn't know, wouldn't that be scary? I think it's fascinating. Sforno, I think, is the only one who says such a thing. But I think it's a fascinating possibility to consider. Number three, the Abarbanel has a second opinion, which is a very different perspective, but I think also very fascinating. The Gam Kidei, another reason, which is our third reason, why should Adam be asleep? Shetiviyehu Simcha Pitomis. He's going to wake up, and it's going to be surprise. Again, not in the negative connotation, where I think some of the men are laughing. Shame on you, men. In the most happy sense. Wow! Unbelievable! I went to sleep alone and I woke up. Not alone. Just in case you're concerned, Abar Benel in 15th century Spain tells us, Vihi kemotze mitzia tova. It's an incredible thing. All of a sudden you were all alone, you know, the wallet's empty, and sure enough, you're walking down the block and there's a diamond ring. Wow! Shetagel nafsho, he'll be so ecstatic and happy. Bavoa e love, behazachadas. All of a sudden, boom! You went to sleep. Look at that. You know, halabai. Every time you take a nap, you should have such a wonderful mitzvah. So, to increase, again, it's all perspective. I alluded to before, this is my own shot, that when it says that Adam shouldn't be in pain, I suggested, I think most Mepharshim mean it more literally, like, why should he be physically in pain? So I suggested that perhaps the nuance of that is also that he shouldn't associate pain with his companion. So the flip side of this, in an even more positive sense, is the Sabar Benel, which is, we want him to be happy. Right, we saw this already in the Medrash last week, right? That Adam we needed buy-in from Adam so that when everything breaks down with the snake, he won't be able to blame Hashem, look what you did to me, you know, because he wanted her. He knew he was alone. So this Abarbanel fits into that theme, that it's an important thing that not only, you know, that Adam should have wanted this, and Adam, Abarbanel takes it another level, he should have been happy, excited, wonderful, you know? It's a simcha. It's a chasura. Who's not happy at a wedding? And the truth of the matter is, there's a lot of midrashim or mamari chazal when they discuss weddings. I mean, our weddings. So there's two metaphors that are most often used. Some is a Har Sinai metaphor. I still remember the one wedding I was ever at, which was close to 10 years ago, where Rabbi Weiner was Masada Kedushin. He spoke under the chuppah, and he spoke all about a metaphor of Har Sinai. That's a whole group of Psukim and Marachazal, and not Psukim and Marachazal, but the other ones are Gan Eden. This is the way I still remember around that same time, close to 10 years ago, when I was interning at a shul in Manhattan. So they had it was their beginner service and or Rebbetzin Young Rice's beginners or Shira type thing. We had a thing on Motzei Shabbos on Saturday nights in the shul for singles. It was basically, DVDs, I guess they had DVDs back then, or something like that, of Elie Wiesel's, apparently he did this at the 92nd Street Y, and it was, I think it was, I don't know if it was put on TV, on PBS or something like that, or just was made immediately to DVDs, but basically it was he was discussing the creation story. I think he had six different lectures, basically all based on Midrashim. I don't know if he quoted a Pasuk or a Mefarish. It was all through the eyes of Midrash. That was the approach. And I remember, I think one of the ones that I narrated, I moderated, or I led some discussion on, had to do with the creation of Chava. And I remember he was focusing primarily on all the Midrashim to speak about this as a wedding, and all the animals coming, you know, and gathering around, and Hashem making a chuppah for Adam and Chava. So, again, if you take that whole approach, so then this Abarbanel is, you know, even stronger. We understand where that's coming from. This is not just supposed to be a wedding, not to be a new person on the scene. We want Adam to be happy, again, in a very real sense, as a model for what we hope every marriage would be.
The implication of all these Mepharshim is that when it says Nishmas Chaim, that Hashem created him with the Nishmas Chaim, then all of the emotional context and the psychological context was built into that.
Spoken, you know, like a psychologist.
I'm saying the Havamina was that this would have to be evolved over time.
Right,
that,
right.
That he had all of these feelings of pain.
On some level. Again, that doesn't mean that they were fully developed.
Right.
And we will see a Mepharish, I hope we'll get to, one of the Mepharshim on the sheet that speaks about perhaps women being, and you won't be surprised by this, more emotionally developed than men. So, whether Adam was all the way, did he have to develop, what's the difference between Adam and Chava? Those are all very open and difficult questions to know. But I think you're right. If these Mepharshim, to the extent, and this is what fascinates me, I admit it, what to the extent that you have different Mepharshim or Marmar Chazal attributing psychological either feelings to Adam, or that Hashem is taking into account presumed psychological feelings, that presupposes, I think Eli's bringing out a point which we've been assuming, at least according to these Mepharshim, that there is some level of psychological development and emotional development already possessed by Adam, which again is just fascinating, which I think Eli's alluding to, which is when you assume that to such a large extent, that is very nurtured. In other words, you know, to have no context, to have no experiences, to have no relationships to form your emotions, but yet to have them on some level, I guess that just shows how instinctive, at least on the basic level, some of them are. Fear, happiness, loneliness, you know, these are very existential feelings, which I guess, at least on some level, according to this, do not necessarily need to have, you know, you don't have to have experienced great pain to experience the first time. You know, when you know it when you have it, so to speak, and I guess happiness in a certain sense as well. I just want to mention that there is an echo, this idea of the Abarbanel, that we want Adam to be happy, the way I had said it before in the negative, we don't want him to be in pain, so a middle variation of that same theme, of the excitement and the renewal, so to speak, is an opinion which is quoted in Chazal and in the Medrash. And the next two sources I have for you on the sheet are two different approaches of Chazal to this issue. And in fact, if you take a look in your Chumash at Rashi, Rashi is quoting this Chazal. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, Pasuk Chav Aleph. Which one do I want? Not that. Yeah, there are a lot of fascinating Rashis. I'm admittedly skipping them. Go to Vayishen. That's the fourth Rashi, right? Is it the fourth Rashi? Vayishen Vayikach. Adam is sleeping, and then Hashem takes Chava from him. Shelo yireh chatichas habasar shemimenu nivreis. He shouldn't see the physical, you know, the natural ingredients before it's formed into the beautiful Chava, because if he would, the tispaza alav, it would be disgusting. So, there's two ways to understand this. One way is to understand it in a very, I guess, in a certain sense, natural or biological way. You know, like Alan said before, you know, you don't want to go into the kitchen to see how the meat is prepared. And that exact metaphor is mentioned. If you say, look, I'm not going to read it inside for the sake of time, but in this Gemara and also in this Medrash, maybe we'll get it, we'll see, but they have that, one of the layers of this Mamar Chazal is they explicitly make that medrash. There's a famous give and take between a certain matruna, this fancy lady, I think she's supposed to be not Jewish, and a member of Chazal, where basically, you know, she's basically asking him, why did God do it this way? And one of the answers given is basically, here, take this raw meat, now cook it. You know, do you want to eat it now? You know, it's a little bit disgusting. You don't want to see things, certainly, in their more natural, you know, and again, I could tell you one of the things I mentioned to you about looking during birth. So one of the four children, I can't remember which one it was, I remember, as all of you know, and half of you know more well than the other half, after the baby comes out, you then sometimes painfully have a second thing expelled, which is like the afterbirth or the placenta, right? It could take a long time to get out. It could be more painful. I don't remember why, and I assume it was an accident. I once saw it. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. It took me a while to get over seeing that. Like, you know what? Or for that matter, seeing the baby before they clean him up, or her up. It's not pretty. It's not pretty. So can you imagine if Adam had seen this raw material, which is then fashioned in the Chava? It's not pretty. Who wants to see that? And the fear is, apparently, that it would have somehow, on some very visceral level, might have tainted his opinion of her.
Interesting.
I think it's surprising, frankly, but because it's surprising, therefore it's interesting. But there's a second approach. There's a second version, so to speak, of that, which is not the way Rashi, is not the opinion that Rashi is focusing on, but it is one which does exist in Mefarshim. If you'll take a look, it's really being implied, but let's see, what am I trying to get at? Give me 1 second, just find what I'm looking for. Well, I think it might be, again, I'm not sure, 1 second. Again, if you take a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin, so the Gemara says we didn't want it to be Hava Ma'isa Le. It shouldn't have been disgusting to him. So again, I think that's probably referring to, again, this more visceral, you know, if you see it, it's gross. You know, that's not that's good. I'm just telling you what Chazal said. Yeah, first impressions do count. That's certainly the bottom line. Take a look at Bereishis, just so you should see the Bereishis Rabbah version of it. According to this, again, I don't know if there's any other opinion that says this. It was news to me when I first learned it. According to the Bereishis Rabbah, it happened twice. Hashem needed a do-over. Again, it's just a nuance, but it's worth noting that the way the Bereishis Rabbah says it is that basically the question was, second line, Lama b'matmunius, why is it done while he's sleeping? Why is it done in secret? For Amar La, and the Rav Yossi responded, B'tchila bar lo, the underlying part, first, that is how it was done. Bara Osa, and he actually witnessed this, says Rabbi Yossi. Malaya Redin Vidam, right? He saw her with all the gook, would be the most articulate word I could come up with. And therefore, he fliga minaru. It was not the Nishtamir. He wasn't so interested anymore. Chazar, and therefore, so to speak, there was a do over. Ubara lo pam. There had to be some level of saturation. Again, I don't know where he would get this from, so to speak, but it's an interesting attempt. Oh, what I'm trying to get to, what I want to get at, is the next is the continuation of the Medrash. Huh? Zosapam. Okay, good. But he doesn't quote that. That's interesting. That's a good Medrash. I like that. Good. I have to take a look. I don't know if there's any other Medrash that works, that hangs on that word, but the Zosapam is good. Thank you.
Where do you see the Zosapam?
No, he doesn't quote it, but he... No, I'm saying it's in the Pasuk. I'm saying, but that's not in the Medrash. I want to just point out that this idea, let's leave that aside, the icky, you know, the icky shot, the gooey shot. Getting back to, to me, a little bit more elevated, the more psychological or emotional idea that we want him to be excited that he sees a Metzia Tova. So a flip side of that is the continuation of the Medrash. And again, it shows, at least, that there seems to be a strain in the Medrash that understands it more subtly as well. Because if you take a look at the Medrash, this Matruna, this fancy matron, responds to Rabbi Yossi and says, again, it's right after I have it left it underlined. Amr lo, she responds to him, Hosefes ani al dvarecha, I'll agree with you and I'll even add on to what you're saying. Amura hayisi lihinase la'achi imi. I was supposed to get married to my uncle. Ba'ayideh shegadalti imo b'bayis, but, you know, he grew up in the house. He saw me growing up. Hilcha'arti be'enav. I was disgusting in his eyes. Ba'halach v'naslo ishacharis, and he decided he didn't want to marry me. He married somebody else. Be'ena na'a kamoni, she says. But she, this other woman, you know, revenge is a dish best served cold. The other woman, she's not nearly as nice and pretty as me. So, you know, okay, leave aside the hubris angle for a second. That, again, it's interesting the way this Matruna is, so to speak, interpreting that idea. It's not so much that, ooh, I'm grossed out, I saw the blood and the gore. It's, if I, you know, if I'm too familiar with it, so then, exactly, familiarity can breed contempt, or at least lack of appreciation. And again, if you contrast that with what the Abarbanel is saying in a positive sense, it's a Metzia Tova. I want to be sleeping. I want Adam to be sleeping so when he wakes up, it's not something that he grew up with. It's something new and fresh and exciting. And again, there is certainly some factor there which adds to the Simcha. Again, we all know, Baruch Hashem, for those of us who have been married a long time, or even moderately a long time, that the flip side of that is the longer you're married, the more difficult or more challenging it is to keep the freshness and the simcha in the marriage. Because, again, it's not new and exciting anymore. So, again, except for me, who every single day is like another bracha and another miracle, and, you know...
Jitto.
Where's the tape? I want to just make sure that Alana heard that. That's right. It's November 8th, and it's 8:45, and I'm sorry I didn't get you an anniversary present. Okay. So,
there's a period that you get to know that.
Exactly. I started that after the first year. The last year, which was our 10th, so we heavily invested in a significant present for her, and I suggested that perhaps that made up not only for the previous nine, but would compensate for the next nine as well. But I did leave myself on the hook for a 20th. Alavai Hashem should give us that bracha. Okay. Just because we're on the topic and it wouldn't be fair to me to not put this on the sheet for at least half of the room, let's just see the continuation of the Medrash. It's interesting, again, the smichut of the Medrash, where, you know, the stream of consciousness of the Medrash, which is always fascinating, is particularly fascinating here. The Medrash, again, I wouldn't say it's completely irrelevant, but in a certain sense, apropos to nothing. The Medrash then continues. We went from the idea of familiarity, you know, leading to a lack of appreciation. Says the Medrash in conclusion, take a look, the three lines from the bottom. Maisa b'chassid echa, there was a certain chassid, shayinosoi l'chassida, he married to another wonderful person. Achas v'lohi midu banim zemezeh, they never had children. Amru, they said, ein anu ma'il l'akarash rachutim. You know what, if we can't have children, what's the point of us being married? Amdu v'girshu zezeh, so they got divorced. Holad zeh v'nosa rasha achas, v'asta oso rasha. So she got married, he got married to a rasha, thank you. And she influenced him, and now he became a Rasha. Halchazos, when he says to Rasha, she, the tzaddikess, married a Rasha man. But also, tzaddik, and she influenced him to become a tzaddik. Concludes the Medrash. Habish hakol min ha'isha. And I have to tell you, there are not too many true words have ever been said. On a physical level, this is the comparable to, as I say, when it comes to physical health, that the whole family can be sick, and everything's still okay. The mom gets sick, and the whole house falls apart.
True.
Right, we all know that to be very, very true. So on a more profound level, says the Medrash Hakol Min Ha'isha. This should be, of course, compared to which famous Maamar Chazal from Sefer Bamidbar? Is it Om Ben Pelas?
Yeah, right.
Oh. Right, the one of Korach's gang.
Right.
Korach's wife was egging him on, and Om Ben Pelas was originally part of the group. His wife saved him, and again, the Medrash again reiterates, you know, it all goes after the wife. Again, it seems to be apropos to nothing else in the story, but why not? You know, it's certainly an important and true idea. Okay, let's try to see what else we can come up with. So the last sources on the sheet are what I've already been alluding to and dancing around with, is exactly how was Chava created, which is another way of saying, what does Tzela mean? The whole world thinks it means rib. Is that really true? So there really is a two opinions in the Medrash here. But it's interesting, before we get to the two opinions, the first, this Vayikra Rabba Medrash only has the one opinion, and it's interesting, let's just think about for a moment, I want to put this in a larger context. One of the questions we alluded to being this year was, what's the relationship between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis? By which I mean to say, we know that Isha, the woman, exists in Perek Aleph. So we've seen that may mean either it was, so to speak, wake up look like, I guess we would assume a man, but the first opinion of the Medrash was androgynous, from Aphrodite, had sexual organs of both male and female. The second opinion said, no, du partufum, which basically means that they kind of shared a back, but, you know, it was a two-headed, you know, the front, the face, and the back. There was basically two bodies, you know, glued together, so to speak. Du partufum, two-faced, and not in any negative sense. So the bottom line is Adam, the original Adam is somehow complicated. It's both male and female, one way or the other, in Perek Aleph. We know that. Perek Beis seems to be different. Or is it? In other words, how do you... the simple reading of those contexts are that it's a two-step process to get to Isha and Perek Beis, and it's only one step. We don't know where that happened or how that happened. We need the Chazal to fill that in. But there was only one step where the Torah itself assumes Ish v'Isha, or Adam and Chava, the man and the woman, in Perek Aleph. So, to a certain extent, that's unresolvable. But to a certain extent, that does relate to this other question, which is, was Chava created from the rib, or was it basically already a two-faced creature which then just had to be separated? Because which one works better with Perek Aleph? The latter one, right? The more you see Chava already being explicitly or overtly, noticeably part of the original creation, so then the less of a gap there is between the two prokim. If you see Chava as really not existing, at least explicitly or overtly or noticeably, in Perek Aleph, and therefore in Perek, we don't know how exactly she got there, but at least in the Psukim, she's not there at all. And even in Perek Beis, she's not there. It's that we have to do this complex surgery and take out a rib and then really fashion the rib, in a certain sense, from nowhere. That's much harder. Then you're really left with a gap between Perek Aleph and Perek Beis. If I had to guess, I would answer that, well, to the extent that you can answer it, the very fact that the raw material is in the rib, and the rib was always there, so then maybe that brings it a little bit closer together. But there's no question, it's more difficult. There's a bigger gap to the two prukim if you assume that the original Adam never had any chava. It was just, you know, the raw material inside in the rib. The more you see it as the two partufim, this androgynous, or maybe even more than that, this two-headed, but not really two-headed, two-faced creature. So then again, it's still not the same presentation, but it's certainly less of a gap. The fact that that is true, I think you see, I'm not going to have time, I'll just paraphrase it for you outside, but that Medrash Vayikra Rabba. The Medrash here, and there's other variations of the Medrash is basically asking on the opinion that says, Chava was really already there in Perek Aleph. It was like this two-faced creature. So the Medrash itself asks, how could that be? How could you say that? I'm reading the underlying part. They ask on that. If the Pasuk in Perek Beis seems to say that it was not that, it had to come from a rib, which was then fashioned. So that's when the Medrash answers, no, that's not what Salosav means. Amr Lehen, mi sitrohi. It means from the side. Kedechsiv, and we have it in the Mishkan, we let Tzela HaMishkan. The Tzela HaMishkan is the side, or the side of the Mishkan. So you see that the root Tzela does not have to mean rib necessarily, it means sides. So I quote this particular Medrash for you because you see it's striking that the Medrash is using a pasuk from Perek Beis to confirm an understanding which is clearly based on Perek Aleph, the idea of the two-faced. So this Medrash is clearly struggling with the contradictory or at least conflicting accounts. I'm not going to have time. And therefore, the Medrash is trying, so to speak, to shtim, or in English we'd call that, synthesize, the two approaches. And again, I think that implicitly, that's the tension that this Medrash is alluding to. Now, just to point out that there are different opinions even in Mefarshim, if you take a look, I don't have it in my Chumash, but if you take a look in your Chumash, if you look in the Unkulus Targum, the Aramaic translation of Unkulus Ager, so the word that's used here is rib. The Targum assumes that it is rib, but it's interesting that Rashi, you know, Rashi, who we're supposed to all know and love, Rashi does not assume it's rib. Rashi seems to be going under the assumption that it's from the side, like this Medrash. Furthermore, the Eben Ezra, who may be, you know, king of all pshat, the Eben Ezra, the last source on the front page of Yoshid, the Eben Ezra, Achof Mitzalosav, Shteit Tzulayo Tzulaos Hayu, there were two sides, in sense, the front and the back. Inyan Ulitzela HaMishkan Hashem. So again, using that idea. So according to the Eben Ezra, and according to Rashi, and according to one opinion in Chazal, it was, Adam was always this two-faced front and back creature, and what happened now was that combined creature went to sleep and woke up from one, divided into two. Very different image. Again, I don't know if it's that significant, but it's really a different image in understanding what happened than this other opinion, which the Targum says, and if you turn over the sheet, it is certainly an opinion in Chazal as well, which is that, no, there was just one Adam, which for all intents and purposes basically was a male, and then that male went to sleep, and a part of the body was taken out of the rib and fashioned to a person, which is known as the female or Chava. That's what the top text on the back side of your sheet says. The first opinion is Amar Min Sitarohi. That's again two sides. That's not that. But if you take a look at the second sheet, Ushmuel Amar Ilah Chad Ilah. Ilah is Aramaic for rib. That's the opinion that says it was a rib. Chad, that was one rib. Mi Bein Beis Laosam Matal, which was one rib from above or from around other ribs, two other ribs. Tachteha Ein Sitkan Ela Tachtona. That again, he tries to bring a proof from the description of the pasuk. What did the pasuk's language exactly say? Let's read it inside again. The end of the pasuk is Achas mitzalosa b'yisar basar tach tena. So he suggests that somehow, I'm not sure, it's a little too subtle for me. He suggests that somehow that reference refers to something among others, I guess, is what he's trying to get at. So it's one rib among others, as opposed to if you just think that it was split into two. So then, what's from among what? So he wants to use that as a subtle proof that it was really a rib and not being split. Again, but it's worth noting that it's clear from Chazal, at least, that the question of whether Chava was created from the rib or was, you know, so to speak, split is very obviously connected to a more basic question, which is, already in Perek Aleph, if we needed to ask ourselves when we discussed way back, what did the original Adam look like before there was an explicit and separate Chava? Was it just a male who then had a female that was subsequently created, or was it always either a hermaphrodite, or more likely, this more common approach seems to be this what's called du partufim, two faces, a front and a back, which is then split into two. And however you understand that, that impacts how you have to translate the word tzela. Because again, it seems clear that grammatically, in theory, it could go either way. There seems to be, you know, unculus, or the Medrash sees it as based on a rib, a part of the Adam, and then you have this other proof based on the Mishkan's usage of the word, that it means a side as well. Now, I have 5 minutes left. I'll try to do the most subtle and controversial part of the shiur in 5 minutes, which was actually planned, so you can't get me into much trouble. No, all kidding aside. Two last questions. I'm going to run out of time probably before I get to the yeha. Maybe I'll throw it as a one-liner at the end. But the main thing I have 5 minutes for is the next question, which is finally. So now we have discussed why Adam needed to be sleeping, and we discussed whether it was from the rib or the side, and how that relates to how Adam originally was formed or not. Now I'll ask you one last question, which is just as we asked, why does Adam have to be sleeping? The Mayan Nafkamina, what's the purpose? And we saw 3 or 4 different very fascinating opinions what the benefit was for Adam to sleep through all this. And now we have the better question, really the best question. We saved the best for last. Why did it have to be this way at all? Why is Chava created or separated by, and again, you can't, no pun intended, completely separate these questions, but why is it one from the other? Whichever way you slice it, why is it one from the other? Why is that, which is, again, fundamentally different than all of the other creations? In the end of the day, you have a parallel in the human race as you have for all the other animals, you have a male and a female. But no other creature was created this way. However you understand it, there is some Dover X mitoch Dover Y. However you understand it, and not that there's no differences, but ultimately it's a question on any approach that we've seen until now. For us, what do you need it for? What? What do you gain by it? Why did we do it this way? What can we glean from it? And you have, I don't want to venture to say which one is more majority, although I certainly hope it's the latter, but in the spirit of intellectual honesty, I have to share with you there are two opposite approaches. The Ralbag, for example, the Ralbag, one of the lesser known, but not inconsequential, Rishonim. If the Ramban and Rambam are Nachmanides and Maimonides, you will not be surprised that when you go to graduate school, that's Gershonides. Right? No one else knows that unless you go to graduate school, and you guys are fortunate, without the expense of graduate school tuition, Gershonides. So the Rabbag says on our Pasuk that the very fact that Chava wasn't created independently, but just mitoch from Adam, what does that show? Clearly the superiority of Adam. Chava is just a piece, and that clearly shows that she's meant to be subservient to him. Let's just read a few of the lines. Ratzal Omer, that means to say, end of the first line. Shehi nivreis ba'avuro ula avodasa. She is created to serve the higher purpose of his benefit. He is therefore on a higher level, he's mentioned first. La husma briasa mimenu, and therefore she is placed to be created from him. So that she'll be better able to understand him, although, which means therefore she can serve him better. Because if she can't relate to him, then she can't help him. So she comes from him, and that helps her serve him better. And more broadly, she can relate to him better. He can relate to her better. But again, he's clearly not speaking, even though I admit I wish he was, he's not speaking about some higher level of compatibility and love. He's speaking about the better you can relate, the better you can serve. And he adds that that's why it's not that way with the other animal creatures. That's why the male and female elephant were just created at the same time from some place, not from each other. So he says it's not a coincidence, it's not an accident. It shows that there is some hierarchy in creation. For whatever it's worth, and I'm not sure this is necessarily good for the Rabbag, Plato seems to say the same thing. Plato says, again, even more, I think, a little bit more obnoxiously, much more obnoxiously, I think, that, you know, ideally, all matter should be male, but no, if you can't cut it, then you could become, in your second birth, whatever that means, a female. So this, it's just worth noting. I don't mean to bother or insult anybody by quoting it, but, you know, we are broad-minded people here. We can study Plato, the Rishonim did. And just to give you a sense that, again, even in the general world, you know, obviously they knew the Bible, and they read into this fact much the same, if even if a little bit more harshly than the Rambam. However, it seems to me that at least one Rishon, and certainly one very prominent Acharon, take the opposite approach. If you take a look at the Sforno is from Italy, the Ravaggio Sforno, he says, Vigat Akas Mitalosav, why is this? Why did Chava have to be created from Adam? We saw, right? Where did Adam come from? So we saw two opinions. Either it was the Afar of Yerushalayim, or the Afar from the four corners of the world. Be that as it may, says with the Sforno, it was the choicest, most ideal, perfect natural ingredients which are used to make Adam. And therefore, once that's the case, you know, once you have perfection, if it worked, if it's, no, it ain't broke, don't fix it. Therefore, he wanted their fichach. Kasher rotz alotz or tzuras on the keva, she kimat dome love. Other than very basic biological differences, they're basically the same exact creature, i.e., no better, no worse, no one serving necessarily the other. So why wouldn't you want the best materials? Now again, you could still beg the question, so can we go through it nachamol and take the dirt from every place? And I don't think he has a good answer for that necessarily. But again, that seems to be the approach he's taking. Much more explicitly and repeated twice is the approach of Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch mentions this both times in Perek Aleph and in Perek Beis, when he's speaking about the creation of Chava. In both times, Rav Hirsch stresses the essential equality of male and female. So, for example, why does it go from Oso in the singular to Osum in the first parak? So he says, although all living creatures were created in both sexes, it's only stressed that the human beings to lay down the fact that both sexes were created equally, directly by God, and in equal likeness to Him. Or on our pasuk itself, in Perek Beis, says Rav Hirsch, with women the material for her body was not taken from the earth as it is with man. God formed one side of man into woman. Man, as it were, was divided. So again, he's taking the approach of two parts within, one part formed into women, built out, arranged as woman. Why? So it was previously one creature, was now two. And thereby, the complete equality of women was forever attested. That part should have been underlined. Our sages also ascribe the special characteristics, and here he talks about perhaps even a superiority of woman. All the special characteristics of the female voice, the female character and temperament, as well as the earlier spiritual and mental maturity to women, as being connected with the formation of women already out of the already feeling, sensitive, living body of man, in contrast to man whose body was created out of the earth. There's a superiority to woman now because she's created out of this higher level of creature of Adam, as well as Adam who's just created out of the earth. I've seen this, I can't remember who, some of Farshim speak about that also in terms of what some of Farshim, the sitters, say, why is the bracha for woman Shastani Kirtso No? So they say Kirtso No and not Kirtso Nam, that Adam was created with the angels and it's a group, it's a by committee thing. And that's somehow less significant than, whereas in the Keva, the female, Chava, is created just Kirtso No. Only Hashem, we don't see Hashem consulting with the angels to create Chava, is just more uniquely and more exclusively God's fingerprint, so to speak. Be that as it may, I'm not here remotely to, the ramifications of any of these psukim and, cannot be seen in isolation. We have many Mari Chazal and thankfully thousands of years of tradition, which to me don't at all work with the Ralbag's approach. But these are sensitive issues, and it's just good to know that at least, they start, the sensitivity issues begin already at the beginning. Just one second to conclude, which is the issue that Harry asked, which is in the second pasuk of our study today, when it says that Hashem brought Chava to Adam. So what does that mean? Wasn't she there the whole time? Wasn't she just created from him? Look at the way the Chizkuni asks it on the bottom of the sheet. Meheche Nevi'ah, from where did she come from? Halom Yitzalosov no kafa. She's coming right from him. Where is it coming from? So it's fascinating, both the Eben Ezra and then the Chizkuni say one basic shot. There's a second thing, which the reason I quoted both of them here for you is because in the Eben Ezra, it seems like they're not necessarily arguing. It's two versions of the same thing, whereas the Chizkuni presents it as a machlokes. But I still want to focus on the thing that you get from Eben Ezra, and I think it's the primary view of the Chizkuni as well, which is, and again, to me, this is a fascinating trend that I've been focusing on, where the Torah or Chazal are stressing the perspective of Adam. So we've seen that with the last week he would be lonely, this week maybe he's scared or happy. And finally, says the Chizkuni and Eben Ezra, Enechinami, she was created from his rib, from his side. She was right there the whole time. But since it happened while he was sleeping, he didn't know. When he woke up, he thought she had been brought from somewhere else. And again, the line which is so fascinating is, V'hakosuv diber al-machshavto, says the Eben Ezra and the Chizkuni. The Torah is writing from his perspective, what he thought was happening. He thought she came from somewhere else. Then the pasuk continues. He realized, oh my gosh, I don't know if it was an open wound anymore, but I guess it was sore. Maybe there were some stitches. My son had staples in his head last week. I don't know if Hashem had the staple gun yet. But somehow he had been sewn up, as the Torah itself tells us. He had to close up on him. But then he realizes, oh my gosh, she didn't come from somewhere else. She came from me. But again, the fascinating point to me is that, according to both these mafarshim, and I know these are the only two that I know who even discussed the issue, both say that the Torah is not talking about objective reality, describing the reality as Adam perceived it. And for whatever reason, we saw different opinions. One, he had to be sleeping, but he was sleeping. And who said he knew about it? This clearly shows he didn't know about it ahead of time. He didn't wake up in the middle. He didn't know what was going on in the middle. And when he woke up, it's, oh my gosh! So maybe he's happy, we hope, that's the amount of hell. And he also thought it was coming from somewhere else. But when he realizes, oh, I got a sore on my back, on my side, wherever it is, and therefore I know that she's really from me. Okay, Ad Kan, the creation of Chava. to be picked up with in 3 weeks. After a 2-week break, Chazar, go ahead, come with good questions, but just come back.